makes me feel sad for the rest. Nobody does it half as good as you. Baby, you're the best.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case, keep your eyes open and watch the road, and, you know, anyway.
Nobody does it quite the way you do. Why'd you have to be so
welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we're going to talk about the 1977 Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me, directed by Lewis Gilbert. So, Brother Jay, introduce the Bond thriller for us.
What can you say? It's got a Lotus Esprit, the submarines.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's got a Carly Simon theme song, and it's got some pretty stiff performances.
This should really be called The Spy Who Loves Boobs.
Well, hopefully we get more boobs later as we get more recent. But how about, can we call it You Only Live Twice Again, but this time with subs?
Yeah. Also, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, because it opens with the skiing scene.
That's true. But it turns out I love the skiing scenes.
Of course you do.
You started a text conversation which really captured my thoughts, which went something like, are Bond movies actually good? They seem really popular. I'm not convinced any of them are good.
Well, I think if you're grading, you have to grade them on a curve, and you have to take into account the time at which they were released. So rewatching them perhaps is not always the best metric of success if you're equating them to what you've seen recently. Now, you know, not all of them are spectacular blockbusters, but they're okay for the time they were made. As you move forward, especially as we get into the more modern Bonds, I think you'll enjoy them more. Certainly, you know, Casino Royale, that crap Quantum of Solace.
Vice Versa.
Skyfall. So, I mean, in my opinion, I think that they don't weather the time well just because the camp factor doesn't always translate. But coming up, we have Moonraker and we have A View to a Kill.
I get what you're saying, and I was trying to figure out like what was going on with society at the time that made this movie seem like an okay idea. You know what, late 70s things weren't going too well in the country, so maybe we needed something really light and, you know, almost a farce of a spy thriller to really lighten the mood.
Something to talk about on the gas lines?
Yeah, something like that. You know, just some really random titillation, a plot you don't have to think too hard about, you really shouldn't think too hard about. Yeah, compare that with like the post 9/11 version when everything was, you know, more realistic and grittier. And yeah, I was trying to give it some credit, grade it on a curve, like you said, but it still came out to be about a D-.
I thought it was more of a C-, but we'll get into a little bit more detail here momentarily.
I may have also been super cranky when I watched it.
For any particular reason?
Tough week. Not sleeping.
Yeah. Shall we just dive into it?
Budgeted for $14 million, grossed $47 million U.S. And I'd also point out that when Roger Moore was hired, they said repeatedly, the production company said specifically that they were going for campy Bond. They weren't going for classic Bond. So that's part of the factor, is that they were trying to change to make it, I don't know, more accessible to the average American audience. So there's some of that going on. And so in pandering to everybody, they kind of made quality for nobody.
When was the last movie released? The one before The Spy Who Loved Me.
The Man with the Golden Gun. You know what? I actually thought The Man with the Golden Gun was pretty good.
Yeah, me too. I liked it quite a bit. It had goofy stuff to it.
So that was 74.
Okay. So it seemed to me that James Bond, or actually, sorry, it seemed to me that Roger Moore had aged about 12 years in that four-year period of time.
He was really starting to look old in this movie.
He looks tired, too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you, like, freeze-framed on him parachuting, you know, at the end of the ski thing, which I realized he did not actually do any of the skiing or any of the parachuting, but when they had filmed him in the harness, he just looked tired.
Perhaps.
Skiing's good exercise.
Then you have the best part of this whole movie was the Barbie speedboat.
The Barbie speedboat? The Lotus, you mean?
No. When they take off in the super fast boat, when they break out in the boat, when they're kidnapping.
Oh, when the bad guy has Agent Triple X?
Right, when they crash out with the boat, you can see, like, it's a little Barbie in a boat in the flash. Yeah, it's very poorly rendered.
It's probably some of her best acting in the movie.
I was going to suggest, yeah. Yeah, Barbie actually seems charming next to Barbara Bach, who, again, I'm sure she's a lovely person, but she was so wooden.
She was great in Caveman.
She's there with her husband, her future husband. That would be Ringo Starr, for people who aren't familiar with the Barbara Bach lineage, genealogy.
With the early 80s classic, Caveman.
I remember, it will not hold up. I cannot imagine it holding up, but I do remember a couple scenes of Caveman. Okay, so let's start off. Can we start off with my favorite part of the movie, which is the British nuclear sub that has a power disruption? I want those analog normal fail buttons. I love that. They're beautiful. They're diagonal. They make sound. It's great. I love that analog stuff. If you could find a way to flip for me to flip a switch and change something from normal to fail, in a diagonal fashion. Be a lovely gift, I'm just saying.
I'll keep that in mind.
Also, a desktop floppy guy. You know, those inflatable guys outside of car dealerships?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. If you can find a USB one or a desktop one. Also, good gift. But enough about me. So, something happens to the sub, and then boom, they lost a sub. Much like losing a rocket, but I'm not going to dwell too much.
You mean space shuttle, right?
No, I mean, remember the rocket in You Only Live Twice? Where the big rocket came up and clammed the little rockets?
I thought it was a space shuttle.
It was a shuttle. Wait till Moonraker.
Oh, no, I realize Moonraker is about a shuttle, but I was pretty sure it was just a rocket.
No, they were astronauts in it.
No, they were.
Yeah, it was a whole capsule.
It was like a Mercury mission. It wasn't like a space shuttle mission.
Yeah.
Or an Apollo mission. Anyway.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. What does matter is that...
No, I think we should spend about 6 more minutes arguing this point.
I just want to say that Triple X's boyfriend looks like the guy from Hannibal, who also played Le Chief. I forget his name.
Oh, Mads Mikkelsen?
Yes. Did you notice that?
I didn't, but it makes sense. Yeah. I love the little, I mean, they had something.
It wasn't him, but it looked like
him. No, they had a piece of business to do, and they did it well when they did the misdirection about who was Russia's top agent. It wasn't the guy, but it was the girl.
Yeah, that was kind of women's lib for the 70s.
Yeah. And the fact that she was named Triple X was ridiculous, but oh well. That was the time, too.
Well, at least they didn't call, like, Alada for China.
Exactly.
Although, like, Amasova, you know. And Gurkhoff, which is, you know, massive jerk off. So, you know, you can make your own jokes.
So then we have a little of M and Moneypenny talking about how Bond's off in Austria. And M says, or tell him to pull out immediately.
Yeah, there's so much innuendo.
It's just the worst.
It's out of control in this movie.
I think it's going to get worse as time goes on. But don't you just love his Dymo label maker secret agent watch?
Yeah, that was so ridiculous.
It's hilarious. I love it.
I had a strong twinge of nostalgia when that thing popped out.
I'm like, oh, it's back in my days of records and tapes when I had to make label placards for artists.
And you had to like .38 space and then spell out special. You see it all around you. Good love and gone bad. And usually it's too late when you realize what you had. And my mind goes back to a girl I met 4 years ago. Told me just hold on loosely, but don't let it go. If you cling to
such a pain in the ass. I'm surprised I don't have carpal tunnel syndrome from that. Because you had to use a lot of pressure on that thing.
Yeah, yeah. You went on a weak letter. And then we have disco skiing.
Yes.
This is a very, very disco-y movie. Like, I think I saw a message to that effect.
Yeah, it was very disco. Disco fabulous.
Oh, so much fun. And I still am amazed that I'm not a skier, but I don't know how much do people need poles for very much. Maybe not. Maybe you can use a machine gun instead of a pole.
What I found particularly impressive was the turning around while skiing and continuing to go backwards. It's quite the maneuver.
And while launching a rocket at Triple X's boyfriend.
Yes.
And then, again, Bond is...
Good thing she didn't really give a shit about him.
Yeah.
I suppose we'll get there.
Again, James Bond is the least secret of the secret agents when his parachute that saves his life is the Union Jack.
Well, it's just whimsy. Maybe he just that's who he rented it from. He rented it from a British shop.
In Austria?
Hey, you know.
I guess, but...
What I really appreciated about this opening with James Bond is they didn't even try. They didn't even try. They were just like, okay, he's leaving. Let's have a bunch of goons go after him. For no reason.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it was Cold War still.
Yeah, treacherous lover, you know, that kind of thing.
It's not a Cold War maneuver, though, to engage in open warfare.
True. So, then we have one of the better Bond songs. Carly Simon's.
I didn't even know this was a Bond song. I did not know that that was the genesis of the song.
Well, it's just got that one thrown in line.
It's not like... I mean, it's not a great song, but it's a fun song.
It's a good song. It's probably to this point like the most popish song.
Well, except for "Live and Let Die."
That's more of a rock song, though, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
When you listen to this song, don't you wonder if this song was already written and she just threw in the line "The Spy Who Loved Me" just to shoehorn it in?
Oh, absolutely.
This song's about Warren Beatty, right?
He probably thinks the song is about him.
Hey, the Warren Beatty, Hughes, was it Howard Hughes?
Yeah.
Movie's mm-hmm. coming out.
Ah, I can't wait. Yep. I have queued up for later viewing. I have Shampoo and Heaven Can Wait.
His new movie has the young Han Solo in it.
Ah. So, yeah, it should be fascinating. So, on with this movie, we have, Agent Triple X, Barbara Bach on the Russian side, James Bond on the, English side, and they have to find out what's happening with the disappearing nuclear subs. This is the first movie, I think, that was a Cubby Broccoli solo production instead of a Harry Saltzman. I think Harry Saltzman pulled out in the beginning of making this movie.
He pulled out, huh?
Yes, and this is also, you know, post the Thunderball thing, so they couldn't use Blofeld as the bad guy. That's why they were going to use like a name like Stavros, but they changed it to Stromberg because it was too close to Ernst Stavros Blofeld.
They didn't want to get sued.
Exactly, because they lost that case.
That's always a great way to make a movie. How can we not get sued?
Yeah, well, so we have the most expensive, like, shifting metal compartment on a naval, so is it on a submarine or just in a naval yard where they pull out this supercomputer that basically just has a transparency laid over with the pen? But that's okay, you know, what can you do? So they have to go on a quest. And the quest is going all over the world. This is again, they didn't really try very hard. They just assume you know what's going on.
It's off to Egypt.
Yeah.
Sheep's eye, date, vodka martini.
Oh my God. I could not deal with it. That guy, the sheikh, he was Sheikh French Stewart. Watch that scene again. That is French Stewart.
Was he supposed to be a British dude?
I think so. If he wasn't a British dude, he was a colonial British guy that went to school with Bond.
Yeah.
So
okay. Good. Yeah. So I'm assuming like the British dude who was in Japan in that one movie. You Only Live Twice, right?
Yeah.
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 But you get to see Bond use a woman as a human shield. He's always such the gentleman.
Again, he is. He's got that judo maneuver down. But yeah, and you get to meet some henchmen, particularly Sandor, the fat Hungarian, and Jaws.
And Jaws.
The 7-foot-tall mute guy with the metal teeth.
I love Jaws.
Oh, here's a little piece of trivia about Jaws that I found out.
Okay.
Through lots of research. He is not the guy from Superman 2.
No, he is not the guy from Superman 2. That's funny.
It's a 35-year-old assumption, just up in smoke.
Hold on. So who was the guy in Superman 2?
The only other movie I'm really familiar with him in is Dragnet.
Yeah, what is...
The Dan Aykroyd Dragnet?
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
Oh, love it.
Dabney Coleman, right?
Yep.
So, I can't imagine that holds up either.
I had the soundtrack with rapping Tom Hanks.
See that, Streamec? We're just in time. We have stumbled into a major crime.
They got the girl off right. Now that's not nice. I think she is the subject of a sacrifice.
Buddy, we're putting this party on ice.
But don't you know we really ought to read them their rights?
Read them their rights. Read them their rights.
Well, I'm here tonight to rap about your rights. Cause right now you're in trouble. Don't have to say nothing at all. Y'all got two calls and you better make them on the double. This is the city of crime. So stand in line. This is the city of crime. You'll never be free to join us
now. Oh, have fun. Tom Hanks turns out pretty great. David Pumpkins.
David S. Pumpkins.
Ugh.
Which, by the way, I thought was ridiculous, and I couldn't understand why people were so enchanted with David S. Pumpkins. But turns out there is a longing in America for Tom Hanks to be goofy again.
Did you guys see Dave Chappelle?
I did.
He was good.
He was good. I don't know if I really am a big fan of David Chappelle.
Mr.
David
Mr. T.
David James Chappelle's Esquire's comic stylings, but he was great in SNL, and you know who wasn't great? Chris Rock. He was so awkward in that one sketch, which I thought was pretty brilliant, the Election Day sketch. But yeah, he was not good. Like, he could read a cue card, but he was overacting and goofy.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of par for the course for his entire SNL experience, right?
I guess, yeah. Well, a slight tangent. The last episode we put out, Headbit, was recorded almost a year ago. And the other one I have sort of in the wings is also from that. There's like one day off. So it was like the 28th and 29th of December of last year. And I realized a couple things. One, I like housekeeping at the end. Housekeeping in the beginning is not a lot of fun. It's like, get on with it, guys. Talk about the movie at hand. Especially if you're not going to really use much of the housekeeping because it's a year old. Also, I really do like the three of us. You know, it's fun to have two of us just occasionally, but three of us, I think, makes for a better show.
I agree.
By the way, if I was complaining about Barbara Bach being a little wooden, I have never seen a more slow and lumbering henchman than Jaws.
Well, but that's on purpose.
Okay.
He's like the Jason Voorhees of henchmen.
Yeah.
I suppose.
What do you want? He's a giant who bites people's necks with his teeth.
Yeah, except you never see him bite any necks. And if you don't think too hard about the mechanism of what metal teeth get you, because it turns out, yeah, anyway. Also, don't think too hard about electrocution through teeth if you're holding on to the person. Please don't do that at home.
Yeah. You think too much.
Exactly. Don't worry too much about it. Sorry, we were back at... of course, everybody wants to see James Bond on a camel.
They do.
It's hard to look suave on a camel, but especially when you look old and tired on a camel.
My humps.
Very nice. So Bond goes and meets with his sheikh friend, and... he says, go meet with a guy named Fakesh in Cairo. And so, I'm sorry. Actually, is it so in Cairo?
Yeah, they end up at the pyramids of Giza.
Well, they go to Cairo first, and this is where Bond uses the lady as a human shield.
Yeah.
As Sandor tries to shoot him, and then Bond uses his license to kill when he actually basically interrogates Sandor very briefly, who is going to fall off of a roof. But Bond's got him by the necktie And Bond says, basically he doesn't say it in so many words, but he's implying heavily that he will save the man if he tells him what he wants to know. So the man gives up the information, and Bond is like, bye-bye now.
Oh, I didn't think, I had no point thought that Bond was going to save him.
No.
That was a pretty badass flip of his tie, though.
Oh, yeah. No, he was putting an exclamation mark like, on it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Let's see. So he's told, he asked the guy where Fakesh is. He says, the pyramids. He goes to the pyramids. And
the pyramids at Giza with that, that bad soundtrack. It's like total museum quality.
Oh, no, it's great. I was thinking, of course, two things. One, which we will talk about a little later, if I remember. As I told Dad yesterday, I cannot think of the Egyptian pyramids without seeing in my mind Dr. Jean Scott.
Dr. Jean Scott.
Wearing two pairs of glasses and an army helmet. But the other thing is, they have these things where you go out at night and look at landmarks, and they have like a narrated little thing. Because I know you can go to Uluru, or Ayers Rock, I guess, in Australia. And you can kind of go to a little resort area and then spend the evening out by Ayers Rock in the majesty of the outback, except for the big rock.
Mount Rushmore has a night exhibit.
Huh? Where you sit in a chair and hear someone narrate?
No, they actually have an amphitheater and a fireworks show.
Oh, cool. So, I guess living in Alaska, we don't have those kind of attractions.
No, you have Aurora Borealis.
Yeah. Which
are more beautiful.
I suppose you could go set up chairs, but it's unreliable and it's cold. And
well, there's observation stations in Fairbanks.
No, I know. And there are hotels, I guess, theoretically, yeah. at least that was, I don't even know if they really exist. They must. But I know it was a big deal trying to get Japanese tourists to come back when the yen was real strong. And they had nonstop flights from Japan to Fairbanks.
Well, I've got one. In Indiana, they have a wolf park with a nighttime show led by a crazy German dude.
And they have wolves? Wolves?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it was a wolf show with cats.
I don't know, Wolfgang Puck. I don't know. We'll put duck on your pizza.
Oh, Heidi, your gravy is too coarse.
No, it was great. It was a lot of fun. It was like, un now we will howl. It was great.
Oh, can I stop and clap a little bit for your Wolfgang Puck impression? I love that.
Mine?
Yes.
I've watched too much QVC.
Oh, no. You make me smile. Anyway, that's not to take away from the wolf park, because I'm sure it was magnificent.
Indiana's finest.
It's a real high bar there.
Trying to think of other Indiana exhibits.
Keep
a live thinking. Recreation of a live recreation, reenactment of the Birth of a Nation film. That's a Klan joke.
Ever tell you about the time I took a bus Lafayette to Madison, Wisconsin, and it went through Gary, Indiana?
Ooh.
Gary was just on fire.
wasn't Sean Kemp from Gary?
Yeah. Weren't the Jacksons from Gary?
Oh, he might have been. Tito?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so the pyramids. Condo made of stone.
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia.
Yes. I was trying to think of a smooth transition to the foreign types with their hookah pipes say, wayo, wayo.
Well done.
Well, no, too late. Too little too late. Yeah, so then Fakesh is sitting with XXX. And Bond knows XXX by sight. Because, again, secret agents know each other. And Fakesh looks very nervous. And he sees Jaws and goes and dashes out for reasons I don't really understand. And Jaws meets up with him and kills him.
Fakesh is fucked up.
Yes. And Bond is following closely. And there was a little bit of fight, but Jaws escapes, and that's where XXX and Bond begin their nodding relationship, at least.
They're naughty, flirty,
yes. Because she has two of her goons jump him on his way out.
Yes, well, there's part of that.
That's Russian foreplay.
So it turns out Bond has to meet a man named Max Kalba, who I thought looked a lot like The Edge from U2. Perhaps it was just the hat, but still. And he has a nightclub in Cairo. But he and Major XXX are at the bar and have a little chit-chat.
Hey, she drinks Bacardi on the rock.
They know each other's drinks.
But she does also point-blank say, many lady friends married only once, wife killed. That's when Roger Moore, who's been pretty flippant up to this point and gets real flippant later, he just stops and says, no, enough about that. We're done. You don't talk about her. You've made your point.
Yeah. That was an interesting choice.
You're sensitive, Mr. Bond. Yeah, anyway.
So. It's like they bring that out, but no one cares.
He cares. Oh, he cares.
No, he doesn't.
By the way, your impression right there was way more emotion than was actually in the movie.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. That was a horrible impression. But yes, she was so bad. I'm sorry. She's lovely. In fact, I think Johnny Carson had a whole bunch of jokes about how ugly Russian women were until this movie. And then Russian women started to have kind of an allure to them, even though, as my knowledge, Barbara Bach isn't actually Russian. But there was a bunch of movies around this time with lovely Russian beauties. So he was sort of pissed that he had, like, canned about half of his fat, ugly Russian jokes. Turn them into, like, fat, ugly German women jokes or whatever. Polish women or something.
Ah, Heidi, your gravy is so gross.
That'll never get old. Okay, Kate, can you do me a favor?
What?
Tell me about Heidi's butt.
I'm sorry.
Tell me about Heidi's butt. You can do it. Describe Heidi's
butt. Oh, Heidi, your butt is so gross.
No, no, no. I was thinking you were like, Heidi, you got a great ass.
Oh, Heidi, you got a great ass. No, that sounded overwrought.
Oh, the best. I love bits and shtick.
Oh, Heidi got shticky.
I can't wait for you to redo the intro with that. I am God.
Oh, Heidi, I am God.
Someday I want to meet Heidi.
But by the way, Heidi's a real person.
She's so. On QVC or something.
I used to work with her at Fred Meyer.
Oh, so. Okay, excellent. So we have this weird thing where Jaws pretends to be a phone maintenance man and is waiting in a
phone booth. Yes, because he knows that he can trick him into getting into the not very private in any way phone booth.
No. Back in the day, see, like, again, we laugh about how all these problems can be solved with a cell phone. Yes. Having a bank of pay phones. What a quaint thing.
What a throwback, yeah.
And it's supposed to look like Jaws is making out with him, right?
I don't know. The whole Jaws is biting people on the neck is a weird thing. Because like I said, they never show it. And it's just weird. But, oh well.
Yeah, I don't think in Egypt that would have been real popular. Because they're not really known for being progressive in their sexuality. So.
Yeah, I don't know. And then starts a rather long scene.
They have a Monty Python-esque van ride across the desert.
Yeah.
Nearly Priscilla Queen of the Desert style, which I say because I just rewatched Priscilla Queen of the Desert.
It's a really long van ride. Seems like to last forever. Followed by a slow motion fight scene around some ruins.
Yeah, but Bond had quite the little microfilm reader with him. That was pretty cool.
Oh, he did. But. Oh, my goodness.
But, my other question is, too, when they're walking through, would all those desert dwellers really be... Well, I guess it's a little bit later on, but when he walks through the village after... But would all the desert dwellers really be wearing black? Probably not.
Don't know. Could be. Don't know. You know what Malcolm from Jurassic Park would say about black, right?
Oh, Heidi, you're too black.
This is never going to get old. What? What, Drew?
It's starting to devolve into a Schwarzenegger impression.
It's okay, yeah. Though. Keep it going. I love it. The whole desert thing is just weird. I mean, it's super, super slapsticky and goofy, which is fine.
Like I said, it's a Monty Python skit.
Yeah, it's the whole thing about Jaws trying to grab them by the van and rips apart the whole van. All the while, Bond is being such a dick to Triple X about being a bad driver. And apparently, that was ad-libbed because Barbara Bach couldn't actually drive stick. So she's grinding the gears. All those other stuff he's thinking about, that whole... the music he's making, does she know in a different tune or whatever? Yeah, that's just all him being an actual dick to her.
Oh, wow.
And maybe he was being
playful.
That's
actually way funnier.
Yeah, maybe he was being playful, but yeah, it was all right at him. He was having a good time, apparently. It didn't seem like Barbara Bach was having a good time at any point in this movie.
No, she was in another movie.
I really like the Jaws tactic of lifting up the van by the back end.
Except he couldn't apparently hold on to it for any length of time.
Well, even if he could, I mean, what now?
That's true, yeah.
If he could do that, he should have just put it on its side or rolled it over.
Sure.
So we end up having the worst romantic boat scene where Triple X poisons Bond, knocks him out, and then escapes with the microfilm, which, of course,
She poisons him with a cigarette. Yes. That's some commentary right there.
Yeah, but he's already taken his own copies of the microfilm. So, you know, they're playing this cat and mouse game with each other. But pretty soon they're going to have to join forces when they find out that their superiors have set up shop. Because MI6 apparently just sets up their main office wherever they feel like it, including at the scene of, like, antiquities who are being actually restored. They go into an area that is actually seemingly quite valuable historically. And, yeah, well, sure.
But Q's waiting with that giant projector, though.
Oh, my God. Q also brings his mobile circus of setting up things where he's like, okay, we need to find something that you could put bad guys on a big spring.
Yeah, M and Moneypenny are just like, yeah, they're just like setting up an office. But Q's like down there like blowing shit up.
Yes, yes.
Ejecting knives.
Yes, mm-hmm. And shooting stuff with his hookah bazooka. That's actually a machine gun, right. But the rhyme is better. Yeah, so, and of course, the verbal sparring between Triple X and Bond, not great. Does not seem... They don't have really any chemistry. They're like chalk and cheese. But they have to go...
Okay.
They have to go to Sardinia. So, next stop, Sardinia. Where they meet Q with a Lotus Esprit. Lotus shoehorned their way into this movie.
Did you skip the part on the train?
Oh, I did skip the part on the train. Was it the train to Sardinia?
I wrote Jaws on a train. And then I wrote, geez, those train windows sure do break easily. Then it's suddenly rail car love.
Oh, man. Well, and the fact that Jaws is gigantic, but Bond throws him out that window? Or shocks him out window or whatever?
Without much effort.
Oh, well, and he goes out that little window because the stuntman is significantly smaller.
Also, I will point out now that at this point, Sony must have paid a pretty penny for their product placement because their monitors are shown over and over and over again.
Oh, the product placement was wacky in this movie. Just wild all over the place. This is where it really got firmly entrenched. Yeah, so they had the train ride where they nearly got killed by Jaws, but...
Then they're on to Stromberg's lair.
Yes, and they go to Stromberg's lair where they pose as a marine biologist whose assistant is also his wife.
Yeah, here's where he actually isn't. He tries not to be Bond. He tries to carry off his sterling cover.
Yes. Well, Bond. Remember, he knows everything about everything.
Came in handy here.
So he meets with Stromberg, who tells Bond of his love of the sea and an underwater city. Now, do you realize that, I guess in the novel and also in this movie, you can still see remnants of it. Stromberg is supposed to have webbed hands and feet.
Like he's an Atlantean.
Yes, that's why he wants to live in an underwater world.
Huh. No, didn't get that.
Yep.
So he's like the evil Aquaman.
Kind of, yeah.
More like the Penguin.
Wah, wah.
I was waiting for... Heidi! I can't do it. I don't have any
German. I retired Heidi for the moment.
No,
I fear Brother Drew was not amused.
No, Wolfgang has to make a resurgence.
No. You misinterpreted my comment. I was actually getting more amused.
I'll keep that in mind.
If by the time the episode's over, you have gone from German to Australian strictly to Jewish, that would be great.
Mazel tov.
So we have this whole shenanigans with Stromberg, and he's going to rule the world, and he's got this lair called Atlantis that's actually pretty impressive. We've already seen him kill a couple people. He has captured...
Isn't this the same ship that they later have in The World Is Not Enough? Like an updated version of it?
Oh, we'll have to see.
Yeah, kind of.
You mean the Atlantis base thing?
No. The ship that swallows the ship.
Oh, okay. The big tanker thing?
No, like the four pod.
Yeah. Oh. That's Atlantis. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to find out. We should jot that down in our notes. Heidi, take a note.
Heidi's on it.
Yeah, so they end up speeding away in Bond's Lotus. And they have a motorcycle assassin with a sidecar warhead thingy. There's a whole bunch of shooting and stuff as they're driving around. And then we have the beautiful Naomi, who was the one that took them out to Atlantis. She tries to kill them with a helicopter. And these aren't bad action scenes. They're fine.
They're not great.
Well, they're not... They're not Quantum of Solace open car chases.
There's some script problems, too.
Well, you know what would have made it better, that chase scene?
A new plot?
Nope, I've got two letters and one word.
AK-47?
Nope. If they know, good, though. If they had...
It's not the word isn't pepper.
Yes. If
God damn it!
If J.W. Pepper had been vacationing on this island with his wife, that would have been better. Hoo-wee, a web heads! You sure can drive.
You know, I might go with you on this one because if they had done it this time, it might be like. When you hear that bad joke so often, it starts to become funny.
This might have been premise. The
yeah.
It's come back around. It's finally funny again.
if only Wolfgang and J.W. Pepper could have a buddy cop show.
Pepper and Fang.
so the chase, as goofy as it is, ends up driving off the end of a pier, and it turns. The Lotus into a submarine, which modern-day Bond villain Elon Musk bought this particular Lotus and is attempting to turn into a submarine vehicle. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Yep. No, I say Elon Musk actually likes Lotuses. The first Tesla was built in a Lotus frame. In fact, Satch Carlson, noted English high school teacher, Ernest Hemingway enthusiast, world's worst story competition winner, or at least a finalist, and
alleged
child rapist, used to race Lotus cars on his road rallies through Alaska and Canada. Satch Carlson. I think he's a writer still living in California. Not talking too much about the fact that they have a name, a law with his name on it in Alaska that now forbids teachers and students.
He actually has a blog.
Oh, perhaps. Do we remember what it's called?
It's It's called Digital Penetration.
Oh dear, that's pretty.
Please tell me
funny.
You're serious.
No, it can't be. But that's so funny. I think that's actually where I learned that term. I'm like, I remember reading that in the Anchorage Times.
I'm gonna make a blog and call it that now. That's brilliant.
With our president-elect, pretty soon we'll have digitalpenetration.gov. So anyway,
the part that really annoyed me was Agent Triple X was shocked by the fact that he drove the Lotus off into the water and it turned into a submarine. But then two minutes later, she knew all the inner workings because she had stolen the blueprints, because that's how you build things like this, with blueprints. Stole the blueprints for this over a year ago.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Also, there's a little bit of wackiness when they land their sub and then like Bond throws a fish out the window. That's always very cute. If you forget that part of the joy of having a sub, part of one of the most critical elements of submarine maintenance is to prevent fish from getting inside your sub.
Yeah, that'd be important.
But oh well. So we end up back in a hotel, and we have the super tanker. Is it the Liparus?
The Liparus.
Yes. And they decide,
which is basically one big ship eating ship.
Yes, very nice though.
It's got the mouth on it like the Reapers from Blade 2.
Excellent.
Check it out. It works.
Okay. So this is when we're angling to find this tanker that is up to something, and Bond uses a lighter to light one of Triple X's cigarettes. And she notices that the lighter is from the city where her lover was killed. And she confronts him and vows to end his life when the mission is ended.
You could really feel her. You could really feel her pain.
Almost the same pain as when Bond was talking about his wife.
Yeah.
No, he actually had some emotion.
Yeah, he gave her a look like he was going to pull a Connery and backhand her right upside the head when he told her to shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, Heidi, shut your mouth.
Yeah, her response was, when this mission is over, I'm going to kill you. I am very upset right now.
So they find themselves on an American submarine that's monitoring the Liparus.
And then the submarine gets disabled and swallowed by the Liparus.
That's right.
And then, this is the thing that irked me.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
They pull the submarine into the bay of the Liparus,
mm-hmm.
and the captain is the first one off the ship? I think not.
Well, okay, you must admit, or I must admit, or I'm going to admit, that kind of all of the... okay, Stromberg is not a great Bond villain. Not in any sense. I mean, if we had explored the web elements of his body, that may have been better. But he's pretty weak in the Bond villain category. But the fights between the submariners inside the tanker are pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's pretty intense.
It's just a whole another movie.
It was.
Yes, I agree.
It was so out of place. I mean, it's sort of bookended with scenes where Agent Triple X takes a shower for some reason.
Exactly.
And then on the other end, the bad guy captured her, and his evil plot was to put her in a revealing evening gown and tie her to a chair.
Tape her down to a couch.
In the meantime, Bond is using, nuclear detonators and stuff to try to get through the armor of the inside of the big ship. So yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, and the bad guys continued the long-running tradition of making sure they were all wearing highly visible, bright-colored uniforms to distinguish themselves.
Yes.
They're all wearing red shirts.
And lining up one by one so you can pick them off easily as they come at you.
But yeah. Bond gets to do his Miley Cyrus wrecking ball imitation.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. And we learned the secret plan of Stromberg is to ignite a nuclear war between the superpowers, which will destroy the surface world, and he will rule his underwater kingdom.
Also, did you know Stromberg kept calling him Mr. Bund?
I did not, but...
No, Mr. Bund.
So Stromberg ends up leaving for Atlantis with Triple X as his captive, as his crew is fighting with the Russian and British and American submariners. Again, it's a lot of, like, you only live twice, but... They have, again, kind of a fun little action scene inside the sub. I think we're going to see some of that echoed in Moonraker, if I remember correctly. Except
yes.
It's less ship, but same kind of interior fighting. And then the missiles are launched, and all the world is going to come to an end, except for some quick thinking, where they trick the subs to destroy each other.
Yeah, but, so I have a question here. There's still radiation and nuclear explosions.
Oh, yeah, no, there's some problems. There's some environmental damage, but, you know.
Yeah.
Not like if they hit a city.
What's funny is I was so bored by this point in the movie that my mind had wandered off track so severely that I actually had no idea what was happening. I realized, like, I just blanked out, like, for, like, 3 solid minutes in the movie. And then they had these missiles, like, going right at each other. And I was like, what the fuck is... But I didn't actually bother to go back and figure it out. So thank you for explaining it to me. This is very enlightening.
Oh, excellent. So, no, but basically this is all just solve one problem so you can catch up back to the villain. And Bond's going to get there first. How's he going to get there?
Or a jet ski.
Yeah, it's called actually a wet bike.
But the wet bike.
Yes, but it's an early jet ski.
It was branded.
Yeah, and it's all very exciting. And yeah, they have this weird harpoon gun dining table kind of thing. Yeah, but then Bond just straight up kills the bad guy pretty quickly. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where the bad guy's going to get away and the henchman will be fighting Bond and then Bond will show up with a girl later. Bond just straight up murders the bad guy, which is fine. He's got a license for it. He can as well use it.
I really like the way Bond foiled the bad guy's booby-trapped elevator. He stepped on either side of the trapdoor.
Very nice.
It was brilliant.
Hey, it's
pretty gangster.
It's not his first rodeo. Mm-hmm. While searching for Anya, Bond encounters Jaws and outwits him using an electromagnetic crane and dropping him into a shark tank.
After, like, a Scooby-Doo chase.
Yes. Which...
Through the hallways.
Turns out Jaws, unlike his boss, Jaws is not going to be defeated. Jaws kills the shark. He's fine.
Yeah. Well, Jaws comes back later in another movie, so...
Oh, yeah.
He had sex with that shark, right?
Surely he did.
I'm pretty sure that's what it looked like.
Donna.
I mean, that's what sharks do, right? They bite to hold on.
Hold on. They bite genitalia. Wait, wait,
well, where did you go during that 3 minutes? I mean,
like, you know, reading some old National Geographic.
You're on Tumblr or something?
Wow. Shark Week at night.
Yeah, there's a whole Bond/Jaws Tumblr. I don't recommend it. It's a deep, dark hole.
No pun intended.
No pun intended, for sure.
So then, Bond and Triple X escaped Atlantis in the pod as the city is being destroyed. By the way, I guess the point of going back to Atlantis was to destroy the Atlantis structure when...
and all of the really rare fish in it?
Yeah, fish and also like special technology and things that could maybe learn from. You know, sometimes capturing something is more beneficial than just blowing the hell out of it, but oh well. At least Bond and Triple X get away in that pod. And Triple X is going to shoot Bond. But she's true to her word. They survive, so she will kill him. But instead...
Why didn't she?
You know, she fell in love with him.
Because he grabbed her by the pussy.
Oh, this is going to be a long 4 years. I told myself I would not refer to him as President Pussy Grabber for at least a month. We'll see.
I think you just did. It's been a week. You can't even last a week.
Fits in the tantrums, man. Fits in the tantrums.
So yeah, so Bond and Triple X are doing it. Then M, the Minister of Defense Gray, and General Gogol find them in the midst of Hanky and Panky. Bond will return in, and then they list the name of a different movie. Except then, because Star Wars, the movie, was a big deal in 1977, they immediately rushed Moonraker into production for the next movie.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. One thing about Bond, as we've learned, Bond surfs the trends.
So Moonraker must be the movie with the pigeon that does the double take? Because I've been waiting for this thing for like 6 movies now.
No, I know. I think it comes a little bit later. I think it comes after Moonraker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
But
Moonraker contains the many references to Close Encounters.
Yeah, well, again, we went from Blaxploitation to Chop Saki to whatever this is, and then to Moonraker, which is Star Wars. So hang on, let me take a quick break. Talk amongst yourselves. I expect to be editing later and hear more from Wolfgang.
Heidi. Of all the things he finds amusing, that's what he laughs at.
So, Oasis, Supersonic.
Oh, my God.
That was a great movie, right?
I just bought it. I bought it outright.
That was the move. I should have done
it was
that.
It was the best. I don't regret buying it at all. It was great. It was great. Amazing. It was more, and you're right, it was more amazing that they were as candid as they were. And I'm not sure what the word is, but I'm so grateful to listen to them and know that they were just so on. I mean, they were so really open about everything they were. And, but I was also looking into, you know, Noel's solo stuff. He has got a lot of solo stuff.
Oh, how is it?
It's not bad.
I've actually, I've been listening to Definitely Maybe a lot in the past 4 weeks.
His singing is really haunting at times. And when he sings songs, as opposed to him singing the same songs that Liam sang, changed mm-hmm. the song. It becomes a different song.
Yep.
I mean, it just, it's amazing to me that they're the same music and the same lyrics, but the voice to me changes the entire tone of the song. I mean, not just literally, but emotionally, it puts a completely different spin on the song. So I've been, because of Apple Music, luckily,
mm-hmm.
I've been going through his solo stuff. It's got some amazing stuff. So check it out. I would recommend it. I will watch the movie again. I watched it once with boyfriend Jesse, and he really dug it too. But I need to watch it again because there's no way I absorbed even a third of it because I was just totally like fanboyed out. So.
Oh, I know. It was really fresh in my mind, and I wanted to talk about that movie as much as we were talking about the actual album. But, that wouldn't have been really fair to you guys. But I really dug that movie. I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah. Eric's got to see it if he hasn't. And we should talk about it at some point, at least a little bit, as an addendum. Because it's amazing.
There's so many just little anecdotes in there that I really dug. Like when he broke out Live Forever for the first time and his bandmates were like, you did not just fucking write that. You did not write that. That is somebody else's song. Yeah, you did song not write that.
No, there's some great stuff. And their mom is great.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, those idiots.
Yeah.
I'm just glad they found something.
Yeah. I'm sad that there is a rift between them. And I'm sad that they will not get back together. Maybe someday, because, you know, it's hard because they have so much talent together, and it's difficult when you like bands and they break up. So,
mm-hmm.
But that's the universal. I mean, it's the universal truth.
But yeah, that was a blast. I have not moved on from listening to a bunch of Oasis stuff.
It gets stuck in your head, that's for sure. And it's amazing that it's, to me, it's timeless. It hasn't aged out at all.
No, I mean, well, yeah, it also has like a very good nostalgia associated with it for me.
Sure, it's got that aspect, but you could, all of that is radio friendly. You could play a lot of that mm-hmm. today in places where you could play it, but it doesn't sound dated. It doesn't sound old. When you listen to some Pearl Jam, I'm like, oh, that sounds like the 80s and 90s, or, you know, mm-hmm. when you're listening to any of their stuff, but this listening again, no, it was fresh. This album could have been released today. So
yeah. And Noel Gallagher is a great interview. Like he will say whatever. Like his whole rant about drummers, that was brutal.
So you got to see the movie, Eric.
Okay. Supersonic.
You got to.
Okay.
You have to.
All right, I will.
Because we have to talk about it.
I will make it a priority.
And just buy it.
Okay, I will.
Because I bought it.
All right.
I've watched it. I need to watch it again. I was telling Brother Drew, I need to watch it again because there's no way I got even a third of what's in it because I was just the total fanboy. So
excellent. Let's just tie up The Spy Who Loved Me. Any further thoughts before we get on to your verdict?
No. Do you have 6 degrees for us?
Oh, no, we're done with 6 degrees.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
So your verdict, Brother Jay?
It's a C Bond movie. It's not a good movie in general, but if you know in the Bond scheme, it's a C. If you want to be a completionist, watch it. Not the best Bond movie. It's not the worst Bond movie, but it's got some acting problems. But the plot, it is what it is. It doesn't take itself seriously, which you could argue that's why the movie suffers.
Well, or you could argue that's a redeeming quality.
Yes.
Could. You lose that argument, but you could.
So, to Drew, was it worth it?
No. No, man. It was not. It's,
okay.
Jason hit the nail on the head. You know, it wasn't a good Bond movie, and it wasn't a really bad Bond movie, which means, ultimately, it's going to be totally forgettable. There's no reason. There's no reason to watch this movie. Even if you're a completionist, you should skip it.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I agree with if you're a completionist, you have to watch it. But yeah, if it's skippable. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think...
And since he killed the villain, the only reason you watch this is for Jaws.
You watch it for Jaws, but you also watch it for the Lotus. And you watch it for you watch it for the first 5 minutes where you see those little normal fail. I love that. It's my favorite thing. Yeah. So, oh, well. What's next week? Is that the man with one red shoe?
Yes.
So, anyway. Okay, so any...
Housekeeping!
So, I finished I listened to and finished in one single day yesterday the Dave Holmes book that you gifted me.
Ah, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. Also, I barely remember him in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I don't remember him from MTV, but I enjoy his voice. I enjoy the way that he tells a story.
He was funny.
Are you familiar with Dave Holmes, Drew?
Yeah, no, I do remember him from MTV. I remember I was watching the show where he was trying to become a VJ.
Oh.
And he lost. But he was my favorite because he was kind of the rock history guy.
Yep. Well, I should gift you the book too because I think the book is great. I think it's called Party of One.
It's pretty good.
And it's his life story in like 19 songs, although he talks about a lot more than 19 songs in there.
Yes.
He had a really good interview about it Was it with Allison Rosen? Maybe on her podcast? She had a really long interview with him.
I don't listen to Allison Rosen very much anymore, but I like her. She's just not, you know, going waves. I go in waves.
Yeah, I mean, if you want more of him, I think that was where I heard that interview with him.
Yeah. Well, he's also the host of International Waters, which is a Maximum Fun sort of game show kind of thing, where he's got two comedians from England and two comedians from America that have like a pop culture quiz. But it's just kind of fun.
And then I have started listening to the Twin Peaks Secret History book.
Okay. Well, let me know how it is, because I guess I'm reluctant to jump in because it's got some length to it, right?
Yeah, I'm struggling with it.
Okay. All right.
I think perhaps it does not lend itself to audiobook well because of the format of the book.
I remember the Secret Diary of Laura Palmer that I may actually have your copy of still someplace. I remember that being, interesting, but not, I mean, not like a great standalone book or anything, but still kind of fun.
Yeah, this is, I mean, and granted, I'm only a couple, well, nah, maybe an hour into it, but it's because of how it's compiled, it's an investigative piece, at least the chapter I'm in, and so the document itself is being read, and it's narrated by different people, so you get at least the context of the different parts of the document in different voices, but part of the document is read by the document writer, and then the investigator is giving her notes over the document, and so there's this back and forth, and it's almost procedural.
Do you think it would be better visual than audio?
I think so. But I'm only an hour into it, so I'll be able to give you a better idea probably another couple more hours into it. Although I'm struggling,
okay.
So it's hard to pay attention because it's not the typical audiobook where you have characters, so you can get familiar with the character and you don't necessarily have to pay rapt attention. This is important document; you have to pay attention to all of it. So it requires concentration.
Okay.
So it's not going to be something you can just kind of listen to just because you're going to listen to something. You're going to have to listen to this when you're not doing something else. That's why I think it probably would be a better book, a visual read. So
any other housekeepings? I actually have a musical housekeeping thing I was going to share, but...
So rewatched A Few Good Men.
Oh.
Still holds up really well.
Cool.
Rewatched Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Still a fun movie. Watched V for Vendetta November 5th, of course, because I do it every November 5th. So it was fun to juxtapose Hugo Weaving V, Hugo Weaving Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So,
Brother Drew, any housekeeping? Any cultural, pop culture housekeeping?
So I listened to your Wild at Heart episode.
What'd you think?
And I have not seen the movie.
Ever?
Ever.
Mm, I recommend it.
It was really interesting listening to you describe the movie, because without any knowledge of the movie, the way you describe it, David Lynch sounds like a real asshole.
He's a weirdo for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like weird for the sake of being weird. And I've seen other David Lynch movies, so I'm aware. And because of that, I had just seen a clip of Blue Velvet. And because of that, the entire time you were talking about Harry Dean Stanton, I was actually picturing Dean Stockwell.
Ah. Excellent.
Which amused me to no end when you were talking about that juxtaposition.
When I was roundly berated by my brother. Because he's
in Dean Stockwell. Yeah. Dean Stockwell's in Blue Velvet. But yeah. So, but that made a lot more that made a lot more sense once you explained the whole thing.
That's funny.
But it was a fun episode to listen to. Another thing I was thinking about was, I know we kind of batted around, maybe doing The Blueprint as our next music episode, cause trying to hit 2001, but thinking we did do Fade to Black already. So maybe that's too close.
We can do whatever you want. I'm game for it. That one I have no history with at all, but that might be a good thing.
Maybe.
I can't remember what the band is actually called, but we talked, you know, after we talked about it, I was trying to find the next Never Gonna Come Back Down by BT. And so Jason sent me a suggestion of, what was the guy's? It was something versus Arnold or something.
I don't even remember what I sent you.
I'm bad. Now that my stupid iPod does not do the same, can't see the same messages as my phone, it makes it.
Did either of you watch the Chaos Experiment trailer I sent you?
Not yet, no.
Yeah, I watched it.
What is that?
Val Kilmer. You need to see the trailer.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, The Made of Sun by Kiao versus Albert.
Yes, okay. I could see where you're coming from. It's a little bit too poppy for my taste in electronica, but it led me in a strange hole, and I think it actually led me back to, oddly enough, Snake River Conspiracy. Have you heard Snake River Conspiracy? Especially the song Vulcan? No. They did a cover of Love Song. Is it the Smiths song or is it just a Morrissey song?
Cure. Are you talking about?
No.
Love Song is a Cure
song. Yeah, okay. There may be. They already also did like a Morrissey cover, I think.
Together.
okay. The Vulcan one is great, and it's got bad words, and the video is all bondage fetish gear and like red and red lighting and stuff. So it appeals to all those things. But I went from there to the Distillers and then Brody Dahl. And I guess Spinneret was another group that she was in. But are you familiar with the Distillers?
Nope.
It's kind of, I consider it kind of a post-punk, but I guess the Wikipedia calls it an Australian-American punk rock band formed in L.A. in 98 by vocalist and guitarist Brody Dahl. But Brody Dahl, she and the Distillers, I think, did a tour, at least one tour, if not more, that was headlined by Gwen Stefani, but Shirley Manson and Garbage was the middle act, and the Distillers, or Brody Dahl, was the opening act. And then they would come in at the end and do like a Three Rockin' Chicks version of whatever.
So they're going to try and make a prequel to The Dark Crystal, it looks like.
Huh. Sweet.
Does the Dark Crystal hold up?
Nope.
Yes. 100% yes. Absolutely does. I own it.
Of course you do.
Drew loves Dark Crystal. Jason doesn't think it doesn't hold up. I sense controversy in a place on the calendar. I may have piqued our father's interest in podcasts. Because we had some time to sort of chill and chit-chat, waiting for mom's procedure to be done. But I ended up telling him about a little bit about the geography we are hitting now, which is I find kind of fun, because we've got Rwanda and Ghana as our latest countries. So go Africa, especially Western Africa. We got more to explore. But... he was asking me kind of about podcasts generally and how people find them and stuff. And I said, well, you know, once you start with one, then you kind of get into the, like how it works. Once you figure it out, then it kind of widens your area where you can see where other things are coming from. But I described the Ono, Ross and Carrie podcast. Are you guys familiar with that?
No.
Carrie Poppy and Ross Blotcher. They're on the Maximum Fun Network, but they take a pseudoscience or like a remedy, like they've done penis enlargement and breast enhancement and cryogenic therapy. And but they've also they
please tell me this was the example that you gave our father.
Hold on, yes, it was. No. But they did. They also became Mormons, and they did like a 6-part episode on they became Scientologists. And but the last two episodes, it's just a 2-part series where it was all about the Reverend, maybe Pastor Melissa Scott.
Oh, nice.
The wife of Gene Scott. and it's fascinating. And so, yeah, so Dad was surprised that I remembered Gene Scott, and I'm like, how would you forget?
Yeah, how would any of us forget?
We all remember Gene Scott.
But it's interesting because...
Vividly.
Because, you know, since Gene Scott died, you know, a lot of... Because he, you know, he was famous for doing all those hours and hours long, you know, sermons, programs, whatever, on satellite TV. And so his supporters or his, whatever you call him...
Disciples?
Yeah, I suppose, would record those on VHS, and they were a lot of them were available on YouTube, you know, just for free. Well, Melissa Scott has managed to take them mostly off of YouTube, and they're digitizing them for reasons they're going to eventually probably going to charge money for them. But it's all kind of a very secret sort of organization because... You know, much like Scientologists and these other things, you know, you have to kind of get an invitation. Like you can walk in, but to go far at all, you have to kind of get an invitation to go into any depth. And one of the things about Dr. Gene Scott is that he refused to turn over his donor list to the government. In fact, he told his parishioners that you could not deduct your...
Donations,
yeah. It was not in
pledge.
Yeah, he did not consider his church to be a place for tax deductions. You know, that was if you were joining, you know, if you were going to do a tax deduction, then give money to a charity. His is not a charity. His is a church. So it should be wholly separate. But yeah, it was fascinating. So I highly recommend Ono Ross and Carey's delving into the ministry of the Scots. Melissa and Gene, not the Scottish people.
Not the country. Yeah, I got it.
So did you hook that up on his phone with it?
No, I'm going to. I may actually put him on CD for road trips or something. Although maybe they won't be going to the cabin for a bit. It seems like a bad idea for mom to be away from medical care just for the next week, maybe.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com. Or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.
Oh, Heidi, your gravy is too gross. Oh, Heidi, you got a great ass. Oh, Heidi got sticky. Oh, Heidi, I am God. Oh, Heidi, you're too black. Heidi's on it. Oh, Heidi, shut your mouth. Oh, Mr. Bond.